Welcome everybody. Welcome everybody out there in the audience behind the cameras. Thanks for joining us. This is the Planet Poppin' in Book of Styles weekend out here in Eindhoven, Netherlands, 2023, a part of the larger scale organization UDD and doing things with Drosha, you know. There's a lot going on this weekend, but we're here to talk a little bit about Planet Poppin', Book of Styles, and all things popping and that, the culture and the history and people's personal experiences based around these types of things. So just to give a little back information on how me and Jing have been connected so far in the collaboration of this event, we both, I think, like the diversity of styles within popping. We both like to push boundaries a bit, like on the dance, and be individuals and, you know, like be three-dimensional in the way we think and the way we move. And we realize that both of our events want to honor like the diversity of styles and approaches and perspectives. So we brought them together for this weekend and just in order to see what's going to go down from the battles to the strutting showcase to the panel, all that good stuff. So that's just a little bit on like why we've connected and why we're doing these things. We're trying to kind of celebrate like multiple generations that have done this dance, people that have different perspectives that do this dance, and of course like you guys are teachers and organizers, so that's like definitely a unique perspective we also want to dive into as like leaders in the scene. So I think first, because I don't have my proper introductions for you prepared, unfortunately, my apologies, I just wanted to give each person 2 minutes, quick introduction of yourself. We can just go down the line, and then after that, we'll dive into it a bit, but I'll let you guys introduce yourself.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, my name is Steen, and I dance since, I started dancing really before I started popping, but when I started popping was late 82, and I learned from TV, like a few dance steps that I could do in the youth club, and then I found out more people were doing it in the youth club, and then that was super easy for me compared to a lot of other stuff. But I did a lot of dancing before, roller skating, dance and all this stuff, but I was about 14, and like in the 80s they had all these competitions, and you would go to the competition and you meet other people that would do kind of like the same thing, and then started to hang out in Copenhagen. We have this pedestrian street where everybody would meet, and then you're dancing in the street, and then came like the like a proper youth club that picked up everything, and every Friday night we could have battles, and there would be about 500-600 people, and 3 circles, 4 circles at all times, so everybody is battling. This is like 84, 85, and I start to win all these different competitions, and I go to Malmö, which is very close to Copenhagen, and they have another youth center, and I go there battling also. And then one day one of the people called me and said, we have a guy that want to battle you. His name is Damon. So I go to battle this guy, and this is in 85. And of course I'm like super blown away. And Damon is like a major, like nice guy, and we kind of like hook up. I think I invite him to go. We also go to London together for the Fresh Fest, because I was there in 85 already, because I was looking for like whoever was good, and I met Bebop and Danny Francis in Covent Garden. I don't know if it says you guys a lot, but they taught me my like first like incredible moves in the African Center in London. This was in 85. I met Damon later the same year. I was also in Paris because I was looking for this guy called Junior that I could battle. So I didn't know how to find him, but I found a lot of other people, and we were dancing. I danced together with them in the street, and I was not that tall, and I was just basically going around when I was 15, 16. But when I met Damon, then we went together back to London, and then I could battle together with him. All the people I met the year before, they were so nice to me. Then I came back and kept them all inspired. They actually, most of like the Danny and Bebop and everybody went to Stockholm where Damon used to live back then. So that's like kind of like my popping background. Then I had the crew Out of Control, my Danish crew, and we did a lot of TV shows and commercial work. And pretty quick we did every Saturday night for a couple of years in the national TV. So that's where I got to find out, okay, I can find a theme, build a choreography. With that said, then I was learning hip-hop dancing, locking, tapping, like all these sorts of different dances that the people around me were doing, the London jazz. And I went to New York in 86 and met with Shake, and we danced on the street with the float committee. So I learned all my floats from Floating John. That's how we learned all the float and all the New York styles, really, was from there. 93, when we went to LA, it was really to dance on Venice Beach, like go there and do street shows. And that's where I met Mr. Animation and Flat Top and Bob and Ron and Mr. Ree and all these guys. And it was all about battling, really. Like, it was fun to battle. After all this, then also in the 90s, doing street shows around Europe, we met these guys called Pop Dreams in Paris, and they were doing the whole slow motion style. So that was where I learned my slow motion. So basically all the different styles comes from different eras. And the Tutting was learning all these systems around 2000, so I didn't do any Tutting before 2000.
I want to clap at that.
Yeah. Okay, well. So, I started dancing in so I was born in Soviet Union, what's now called Russia, and started dancing really early on because my mother used to bootleg MTV and she was one of the first expats, like somewhere in 89. I go really short because it's interesting how the dance emerged for a lot of people in Soviet Union back in the days, right? And she would go to Italy to work as one of the first allowed expats to go out of the country and then tape at the box MTV just for 3 hours and then bring it back to me. And I put it on play and I watched the dance there. And I remember tell the story because can you imagine for 2 years I watched the tape, that was the same 3 hours. But the last song ended halfway. I don't know which one. But I picked up some dancing from there, and then when Soviet Union started breaking up, there's a lot of influence from stuff like MC Hammer, and a lot of Soviet artists just copy-paste exactly the same thing. So they looked the same, danced the same, had the same clothes, and this was my introduction into hip-hop dancing without any proper knowledge. In 94, my parents immigrated to the Netherlands, where we are here, to Eindhoven, where I stayed and kind of kept dancing on a down low because the Dutch rural community where I'm from, it's the Dutch don't dance. That's a proverb. It's a really not dancing culture. It's not a place where you grow up as a Dutch kid and they'll encourage your dancing. But during the school parties, I couldn't resist, so I danced, and that was how I got my first girls and friends anyway, as a really like Russian looking kid who's only two or three in a thousand that was foreign to the community that I grew up. So it became my way in. In 1997, I've seen Run DMC's It's Like That, and just the way it is, very famous video clip where they have like Cujo and Mr. Animation, and it was it. I recorded that on the videotape, rewind it until I could see, I even remember exactly what Mr. Animation did. But I was also breaking.
Basically, for the most part of the 90s and the end of the nihilists, I was breaking and popping without knowing there was even a difference. Mm-hmm. And I have to understand that somewhere along the time we met with Jing, usually we were battling against each other.
Yeah, before that.
And it was I liked that time a lot because it was really vague. What's the right? The border was where does one stop and finishes? So people used to lock in the same battles as they popped in the same battles and break in the same battles. And that was a really fun time. I think somewhere in the late 90s and the beginning of 2000s, people from Rotterdam, especially Lloyd, he started to bring up the first knowledge. Mm. And with this knowledge came the Boogaloos and the Mr. Wiggles had a lot of influence on our dancing, because I'm basically from that generation of the 90s. And at that point, we hooked up with Jing and started winning a lot. So we were like the terror of Netherlands. We won everything that had a stand-up label on it. Mm-hmm. But the more knowledge there was, the worse they did. Yes, that's. I'm not afraid of the story. I'm not ashamed of it. Yeah. So the more we had class, he had more talent for it. I had no talent for it because I really hated the pop. Mm. And the fact that you have to stick on it. Meanwhile, I just couldn't. So we went, the more knowledge there was, the worse I did, and the better he did. So I slowly moved away, and I moved to theater. Mm. And it's within the theater and artistical way that I could find a mix match between something that's considered wrong. How do you combine, let's say, animation and breaking? Mm-hmm. Right? Until in 2012, I did this little experiment in Paris in one that used to be experimental. Which was lost for me, like, what the I'm sorry, my language. What is this? Basically, most of my animation, big part I learned from you, even though you don't know. And I drawn all the tapes, especially how to do this. Yeah. It was, I think, a tape of, that's a dancer from Los Angeles, who made a whole trip through Norway countries, and he just filmed their bits and pieces. There was also Sonic, there was a little bit of you, and this was basically the school.
It's a willpower.
Willpower, thank you very much. So I rewinded.
From the
effort. That's right, I rewinded your pieces. Again. I could. But there was no, let's say, no historical knowledge. There was also no way to find it.
Yeah.
Which was really fun. But the more knowledge there was, the more I understood. Actually, I'm the freak of the mall because I was also into breaking, where I had quite success. Always in the underground because my style was too weird. Mm-hmm. And my style was also too weird and popping. Mm-hmm. Until that, we didn't even call it popping. It's so fun. I thought it was called Electric Boogaloo or Electric Boogie. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do? Yeah, I do electric. Some people even call it shocking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you had that term or not, but here, like, who are you? I'm a shocker. Because, like, the first knowledge is like, what is this crazy move, right? Where you start, it looks like a shock. Most of my, let's say, conscious career as a grown-up, I spent away from popping battles because I knew I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it through pre, so I won the Just a Boo, but I can't make it through pre of a popping battle. I think still I cannot. And accidentally innovated a couple of things, like, let's say, like the threading, a lot of threading styles, at least they say, I'm not sure. Especially also the floor animation, so I do a lot of really weird... things, at least they were weird and too tense on the floor, but now also kind of classic, because also Yaman is there, like people they exchange, maybe if you know how Yaman moves to the floor, right? And at the same time we were looking and connecting a lot with, but I've never visited here because of my passport, with people from LA, so elsewhere, David elsewhere, Midas, Skywalker, which were all kind of freakish. And I'm part of that little small niche group that were like, yes, that's exactly what we want. And the music is not always Roger Zapp, no respect. I'm not disrespecting because I love the culture. We never stop practicing. So until the day I still practice with the poppers. They even put me in chat groups with them. But I don't, I'm not considering myself, so I'm like, Jim, are you sure I'm going to sit here? Consider myself that much of like a, let's say, legacy or heritage of the culture. I'm an observer from outside. Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Double.
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, nice. Where shall I start?
I'm thinking, like, for me, when it all really started is even also pre-popping, like, pre, you know, having a passion and admiration for popping. I was like, I was born in China, first of all, and I grew up with a lot of martial arts on television. So in China, it's really normal that you always have martial arts on television. It's literally in everything. You can see it in, you know, in series, in soap series, in commercials. So it was always just, you know, a normal thing. And I was just like imitating all the martial arts, you know, just trying to be a, you know, just trying to imitate the moves. And, but you know, no dancing, you know. So and then I moved to the Netherlands when I was 7. And I started to listen to music gradually, because before I never loved music when I was a little kid, and I don't know, maybe it's the Chinese music. It's just I didn't resonate with it. I didn't feel it was very cultural music and very, I don't know, a lot of propaganda stuff in it too. You know, just I never felt the music. And when I moved to the Netherlands for the first time, I started to really get into music was when I started to discover Michael Jackson. So that was the first time I was like, whoa, this sounds different. You know, I didn't even recognize the, you know, the, I couldn't even hear, understand the words. I didn't know English, but I just liked, you know, the melody and the rhythm and just the whole vibe. And I loved his movement. But when I looked at, I remember I watched that and I just think, I really thought, okay, I didn't even think, honestly, that you could imitate it. It didn't come to my mind. I was like, oh, this is someone with an X factor or something special born with it. You know, I really thought, didn't think about it as a skill. So I just, yeah, just listened to the music. And when I was 16, I gradually started to, oh no, I saw one video, and that was when Kazaa came up. The Kazaa, you know, all the, so you know, the media sharing platforms.
No, they don't get together.
Kazaa, Napster, and all that stuff. Yeah, pre-YouTube era, right? Pre-YouTube era.
You had to download the video clips.
Yeah.
A long time waiting for it.
Yes, bytes, bytes per minutes, right? And then, yeah, and I think, I didn't know the term, you know, I didn't know what to look for. So only thing that I just remember hearing sometime was the term electric boogie. So I just typed that in and I found a few clips. I remember one of the first clips I saw was Nam Hee Jun from South Korea. And he had some video clips from some music video clips. And I literally, like what you guys did, I rewind it 100 times, you know, watched it. And very low pixel, you know, so you couldn't even see the pop. You couldn't see the pop, so it was not distinctive. So you could only see the shape. You know, like toots, you could see waves and some body isolations, but nothing more than that. So I just imitated whatever I could find. That was my whole deal. And also I grew up starting with dancing with no dancers around me, so I didn't know anybody was dancing. So I wasn't influenced by direct influence. But then gradually I started to discover b-boys in my town. So I joined a crew who is now the Ruggeds, but before it was called True Skills. Best name ever, not. But so
it was the thing. Yeah, it was back in the days you had to have this name kind of.
Yeah, the bad name, the better, right? So So I just practiced with b-boys a lot, you know, just borrowing b-boys, and then we met each other a few times in battles and hit it off, and then later, I got out. I stopped dancing. I started into my education. I studied industrial design, which is basically product designer, and I loved it. So I got all out on that, and I just quit popping fully. Like, and then within 3 years, I was like, okay, I got itchy again, so I wanted to start, and then I took a workshop from a guy called Esteka, who's actually a famous Dutch dancer, and he taught, you know, it was like not even popping, but it was a crump and hip hop and house workshop. But I just got my, you know, engine going, and then I just started dancing. I picked it up, and since then I didn't stop anymore. So and I just go a lot, but I was still studying and also dancing. I started to win battles, you know, some Dutch local, but also a little bit international stuff, and gradually I finished my education, and then I got, I had to start doing work, no, make money. But yeah, and I wrote, I couldn't find a job as an industrial designer. It was at that time the market was very saturated, so I couldn't find a job. And then I just got into papping, and I got requested for a lot of workshops, and gradually I could start to earn a living from it. And then in 2012 I started developing COSIN, the judging system for battles. So that's also been a big part, part of my life, became a big part. And for that, my pursuit for it is to improve the whole community that we are all part of. And I believe, like we discussed many times, that competition is a central cog within that. So competition is a big chunk, but it's not solely about competition. So I believe also that competition, cog, it should be connected with the education, and also on the other side it should be connected with the social, and it should be all connected. So my pursuit for COSIN is to find those connections wherever I can and to bring that about. And the Planet Popping is amazing because it's actually a platform, almost like a pilot event that I can try out new things. And of course with COSIN I got a lot of clients give me a lot of requests continuously, can you do this, can you do that, and that gives me a lot of ideas how to build more on top of this judging system.
Yeah. He just downplayed his role as a popper in Dutch community.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. He also been one of the first big influences all over the country to actually teach and inspire, being like at least getting to the battles to some level. I think you broke a lot of doors open for other poppers right now in the Netherlands that were like either looking up to you or trying to beat you.
And thank
that's,
you.
That's important to say.
Thank you. Yeah, I did a lot of popping. I did a few battles. I won the Dutch championship.
Five times.
Not downplaying it anymore.
No.
Yeah, but it is. It is also your students. The students of your students. So that's very, very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I will leave it to that. I think.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, give it up for Jing, y'all.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll just jump right into it. The first big question is kind of a semantics question, not because I'm excited about the semantics that poppers talk about, but just because poppers talk about this a lot, especially right now. And people, there's a lot of confusion right now, For example, just to lead into the question, popping, right? Is it an umbrella term? Is it an individual style? Is it both? At some points when I speak the word popping, just so everybody knows, when I'm going to use the word popping, I mean an umbrella term.
Yeah.
Just so you know ahead of time when I say that. I think like there's situations where it makes sense where it's like, oh, yeah, he's popping his muscles, right? And he's like focusing on more of a popping approach here. But then there's moments where it's like, I need to tell my brother that we're going to go watch the poppers over there, and I don't want to tell him, oh, they're waving and animating and ticking and robot, you know what I mean? Like, so this whole thing with the semantics, right? People think different things. There's a lot of debate around what we call the dance, what the name is. So I just wanted to open it up and almost even start with, like, first off, and this is for everybody, what do you call what you do? Like, when you're doing popping, what names have you heard throughout the years? I know you mentioned Shocking, but I know there's others too. The names have kind of changed. The common language that's accepted keeps changing. And then also just how do you feel that, like, do you feel that the terms sometimes exclude people? Like, sometimes I feel like maybe people use a term to be like, I'm the real of this term. And, it's like, you're doing that older thing, or you're not a part of, like, the way we're doing it exactly. Like, it almost becomes niche.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just wanted to open that dialogue for any three of you to jump in on any of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, should I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
So,
sure.
I ask a lot of questions when I met Damon or people in general about where this is from or that is from, and Damon knew a lot because he started in 76, and I also asked him, so what about before you? And he said, well, there was always these guys that were dancing before me when I grew up, but you would have to ask Damon about these things because it's been a lot of years since I checked it with him again. But as far as I remember, he said when he started, it was called the parking lot dance.
The parking?
Parking lot dance. Yeah. And it's funny when you think of Slim Boogie.
Yeah, the tradition afterwards, right?
Yeah. So you can kind of like see how that could happen.
Oh yeah.
But then he did this other style also. There was the bus dance. So what's the bus dance?
Something with locking, I guess. No? Like the bus stop. Or
that's
the...
too. That's too big, right? When you're sitting in the bus. Yeah, yeah. So what can you do in the bus? It's of course all the hairstyles.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did, like Damon did a lot of these hairstyles before. That was the bus dance.
Yeah.
And then the other was the parking lot dance.
Yeah.
And for me, when I grew up, it was always electric boogie.
Electric boogie.
And in France, it was super confusing because it was Les Smurfs. And in London, in England, it was body popping.
Mm-hmm.
So that was completely already ruined by then. But I think for me, electric boogie is still like, because I grew up with it and everything with New York, and I love the graffiti aspect and the producing the music and the rap and like the whole hip-hop community. And I think also I talk a lot with Storm and Robo C and Gabban and these other guys in Europe that we grew up together, and we had everything was focused about the culture. So at all the events or all the jams, it was kind of like you met everybody from all the different elements of hip-hop. So in that way, there was the b-boying, the breaking, and there was the electric boogie, and then locking, and then later came hip-hop dancing. But then again, when I met with Langsom and his cousin that was doing performing the slow motion dance, it was very important for them to tell me that it was not a slow motion dance. It was Pop Dreams, and that was the name of their crew also. And then there was these other crews that specialized in what we call like slow motion dancing, which is not. But they were from Paris, there was other people in Lyon, and there was south of France, and they all had different crews with different names and different types of styles within moving animated in a slow speed or a very fast speed or like a frozen thing. And they were like super physical about it, and it's not something I seen like come back again. So in some ways I think like it's fun for me to hear your stories also with the electric boogie, and hopefully sometime Europe can also get to tell its own history. Because I mean, in Russia I saw a lot of people dancing before 86, like on TV, like Russian.
But they're closer to the border of, so it's Estland and Letland.
Yeah, I don't know, I just saw it on TV, right?
And they had two names for it. Was always breakdance, but it was upper or lower breakdance. So they would ask, do you do upper breaking? No, breakdance. Upper breakdance or lower breakdance? You know, right? Funny. So you go down, you do footwork and palm moves. So the lower breakdance. You do upper breakdance.
Of course.
So after years of being away from Russia, I came back, and that's the first thing they asked me. Oh, so you do breakdance? Yeah. Upper or lower? I mean, I guess both.
But you had also a b-boy community here before 86. But actually I street perform
in the Netherlands.
Yeah. I street perform here already 87 or 6 together with Out of Control. And later on together with Thomas, my popping partner, and a drummer. And that was, we was also in Eindhoven. Then I remembered everything was red on the inside of the city, like in some
flowers.
Yeah.
But they changed that.
They did, right?
Yeah, in the Netherlands you had the Henkie Bakboord.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Paulo Nunes, yeah. They were kind of the first gen.
Lloyd.
Lloyd was not there
was
yet.
Was the first?
No, Lloyd was not there yet. And like I said, the Soviet Union had the upper-lower breaking, but I was actually away from that period. I was here. But it was strange to come back, and I considered to be some kind of pioneer when I was not there.
Yeah.
But it was just the age, the, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we indeed, from the legacy of Europe, that's of course that we have a European legacy of not knowing. So we have been introduced to the proper terminology only when the first EB started traveling here. Mm-hmm. Right, so some people got, I think it was Lloyd, right? One of the first.
The first one was from Laura Hannes, got Western Wiggles over. Mm-hmm. And then later we got Sugar Pop, you know.
Yeah, and we brought a lot, brought a lot of people to study, teach.
Yeah.
And it was always a very confusing terminology, where I think I'm the same as you. When I think everybody says popping, we always think, okay, there's all those things, right?
Yeah.
The things that we do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then substyle, animation. And he's the professor, so I'm not that. Jing knows all the terminology. Until something interesting that Wiggles told me is about boogie break. He said, yeah, but we used to boogie and break. So kind of to give perspective to the generation that I'm coming from also, was supposed to do all of it. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to break, pop, lock. Mm-hmm. And this is what we did in battle. And in his crew, he was the pop locker. And in my crew, I was the pop locker.
I was too in mine.
That's right. So when the battles came out, there was the music switched. And you would hear electro, freestyle, electro.
Yeah.
You know, it was your part. I missed those days. That was fun.
Me too.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That's when popping and breaking was always in the same space.
Yeah. I did a lot of b-boying. Always, right? And a lot of acrobatics. So, always.
It was, And the terminology that I used, and then eventually was catching up, actually, most of the styles that have been on the real outskirt. It's like animation. At some point there was like a dubstep animation, kids from USA, but I never really connected. Then there was liquid, liquid waves, liquid pop. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it has something to do with the musical choices, right?
Yeah.
So I would say that's right, that my own dance legacy is more connected to the rave and bass culture, which also makes sense if you see the way I dance, more than the traditional funk culture. I do have those same techniques, so I can wave and I can pop and I can boogaloo. I know what it all means and I know I study it. But the legacy is closer to people that sadly disappeared. Them did a real culture of it, of never made it, is somewhat like elsewhere. Like, and he explained me there was quite some niche dancers in the West Coast that did it, with some even, he tried to trace back the heritage of this. But basically, as far as I understood, there were some poppers already in the 80s going to the raves.
Yeah.
And obviously, when the music changes, all this, the fingers and the waves and everything changes. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, I like that music too.
So there's
place for that too. That's why it's beautiful.
Nice. My own experience with the terminology and the semantics of it is mostly just by, it's mostly online. It's just digging a lot and, again, casa, like those things, I didn't even know what to look for. But I do remember that at one point, What's Poppin', the website came about, it was like on West Coast Poppin'.
West Coast Poppin'.
They had a forum, and that I was always on there. Yeah. I wasn't really engaging in the
forums.
But I was just checking, reading, and I liked like the page, because on the front page they had some knowledge in there written just basic, and then like a lot of things opened, but also simultaneously two things happened. Basically, I got, you know, on one side opens up a whole world, and whenever you learn a new term, and it just, oh, okay, what is term, and then you dig into it, but then also it can be confusing, right? So it's both, it's learning something, it's opening up a world, but then you see a lot of gray areas with a lot of terms, other terms that are also describing similar things. So, and then, you know, just gradually you just kind of feel like, you know, like on the one side, we're talking all about the same thing.
But it's ambiguous, though.
Yeah, it's very ambiguous.
Very ambiguous.
So I think generally, language is important, you know, like, and also in our culture, in any culture, language and body language. And so I think it's a good thing that it's changing. It is not.
But is it changing?
It's a good question. It's not changing, as there's not so much new terms coming about.
Yeah.
But it's terms of being more hope, like actually by persons like you, like for instance, the video that you did about Boogaloo, you know, there are four different kind of Boogaloos and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and then I started to talk with anybody that I came across, you know, what is your understanding? What is your understanding?
Yeah.
So I do feel like it's expanding more these different, you know, like how you can interpret these terms.
Yeah.
But we are not there yet.
Yeah.
You know?
But should,
you know,
should we? Do you have a... Because if I zoom out, this conversation is also with hip-hop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That this conversation even bigger is with urban.
Yeah, exactly.
How big is the umbrella, and if it's an umbrella? And I really like ambiguity because it gives us a let's say, a more tribal sense than more a scientific sense. I really love those misconceptions. It becomes like a tribal story. So, in my tribe, we used to call it electric boogaloo. But in our tribe, we used to call it. And it's somehow, if we try to flatten it and get all those things, at least that's my, really my, and I'm not afraid to speak. That's the reason I actually got out of it.
Yeah,
Because right, the judges went on, oh, you're so creative, so, but you know, ones and the fours and the hits and the dos and the ah, and I'm like, god damn, I just want to dance and I want to show the, you know, and which is, it's, once again, it's not disrespecting, because I really love and study the culture.
You just don't like the limitations.
Of that battle, because, and then in the ciphers, I'm all good.
And
then when it comes to the battle side, you have to respect, and,
It's super complex, but it's, you can zoom out in a few ways. Like, even if you go outside of dance and just look at the words, like, of course, words mean multiple things based on the context, right? So, like, when you look at the word boogaloo, you could be talking about music, you could be talking about a piano player, you could be talking about dance, you could be talking about different types of dance, James Brown's boogaloo, you could be talking about a boogaloo roll, you could be talking about what the Oakland guys are calling boogaloo. You know, if you look at the word popping, that is, a lot of it's slang, you know, like popping is like what's popping is that means what's up, you know, what's popping, what's up, or, you know, is the party popping, is it dope at that party, should I go, and then of course there's like the action, you know, of popping, like people get that. But like, I found that just talking to a lot of different people that have contributed over the years really gets it out of the right or wrong. You know, like once you talk to enough people that like have contributed and have different opinions on what popping is or on what boogaloo is, you start to realize like it's, there's not a, we have to get out of the right and wrong thinking a little bit and more into the just the fact that there's some gray areas and people are going to think different things. Because even when you guys called it electric boogie over here and people came and showed the real way, I work a lot with the people that think that that way wasn't the real way. So it's like almost in these traditions and cultures every 2 to 3 years... the person 2 to 3 years after you, that person's saying, no, that's not it. You messed up what I did.
I love it.
And then that person's going to say the same thing about
that's
the
right.
next city or the next crew that got
inspired. And everyone else is eating popcorn.
And it continues on and on. So it's like I've had a whole reimagining lately of the word real. Like I don't like to use that word too much because it's like the word cool. It's like how do we, who defines what that is? You know, like, I feel like in order to find my own flavor within popping, I had to be wrong a lot. I couldn't be perfect because being perfect is not me being myself. It's impossible. So I found that like sometimes, like it's about not being too right, you know, like flipping it, being a little bit wrong, you know, but The reason why I feel like that is still cultured and why that's still traditional is because every OG that I talk to says that. You know, they're like, I flipped it. My crew did it like this. We did that move like that. I changed. This was my personal thing that I added. So it's like we still have to be able to contribute, you know.
But it's
like,
difficult. And it's from a Maverick standpoint, it became at one point very difficult to contribute. And that's what I've seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Sub-scenes emerge. Yes. So there's quite a big animation scene that doesn't want to go to popping battles,
exactly.
Right? They don't care. They like other music,
yeah.
They like other traditions.
Yeah.
And there is even a huge influence of the whole animation into the contemporary dance.
Yeah.
It progresses there where you see every big company in Europe
yeah.
has people train contemporary dances in the way to pop,
yeah.
animation robot and transform it, right?
Yeah.
And somehow this inward looking, I'm sorry if I sound a little bit, I'm self-proclaimed scientist of hip hop, mm-hmm. goddammit. So I like, finally we can, with this inward looking, makes us also sometimes blind what's going on.
Exactly.
Out there,
yeah.
outside of the world.
Yeah.
Because the teachers that, if you go to something like NDT, that's National Dutch Theatre Company, that's the hugest in the world. And when you see them animate, it has been, for instance, studied, taught by Pac-Man. So Pac-Man,
yeah,
probably,
yeah, yeah.
this
so,
came to the company
yeah, yeah.
to teach that. Well, and his already his relationship with popping is quite fake, because he's one of those mavericks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Why? Because part of it is the terminology, it's the way how strict
yeah,
we
yeah.
learned from EBs mostly, I guess. How strict, so
yeah.
you're either it, you have to respect that, that's
yeah,
the
yeah.
way it goes, otherwise you're not part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit of the shame, because if I... For instance, position it next to breaking. Breaking is much more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be, I'm sorry. into what's weird and what's very artistic
yeah.
within the right within the styles. That's why at some point breaking had the abstract breaking, the more foundational styles, and more power moves and footwork. Yeah, it disappeared a little bit. But for perspective, we talk with Jing a lot. Like, how do you position those whole scenes that now emerge
yeah.
that are completely like, come on, we know they're all animating, they're waving,
yeah.
but put it in completely new context
yeah.
because they feel outside of the
that's
popping culture.
That's kind of the next question I wanted to ask is like...
If I can say something, like, I think it was always like this, like, and a lot of the stuff that I wanted to do was always like trying to combine all these different things into something. And when I started using all these mechanical moves, then I had to figure out, but it's a mechanical movement that comes from, okay, my arm goes from here to there. If I let this stay here, I have to lean all the way over here to get to here. So for me, it's kind of like the science of the movement not being so important that it's popping or not popping.
Mm.
It's kind of like, same like you said about
Illusion.
The Chinese culture, about the whole history of those movements. So when I did ask Damon, like, how far did it go back? Then I also knew with like normal, what's it called, mechanical movement, dancing, if I had to figure out when did it start, then I have to figure out when did the technology start. So just Google it and you can see in Europe it's the 14th century and the first clock towers are coming and people are coming out and
yeah.
hitting the bell
mm-hmm.
and coming in. And of course somebody's going to try to imitate that. That's like, that's what we do,
yeah.
right? And I think also, compared to, you have to feel special to do this. Like, if you didn't feel like you were making up something, then that would be like dehumanizing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole human factor of it is that, like, how important we all are, that
yeah.
we can all create something. So I think, also I'm 55 now, and I started when I was 14, right? So. And I learned from so many different people, different styles, and that all became me, and I can pass that on to somebody. So when I do teach, I try to talk about gravity and anti-gravity. I talk about geometrical dancing, and I talk about the space and the fixed point and more the mathematics of it.
Mm.
So like all these different styles all fits in this thing.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yes, yeah.
As long as you have the system, then the system will provide for your personality, because it's kind of like chess. Like, you just have these pieces on the board and you can move one by one little, but we would probably never move the same patterns. And just the fact that you can move your hand, okay, I can move it over here, do it here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we would basically never do the same, even though that we have the same structure on the body and we're so similar and we have the same moves and we make, and it's always progress. And I think the dance will never stand still, and with all the dubstep and all the Dragon House, and it is not nice that they can go to a popping battle and not be respected for their craft. So it's definitely a conversation about the real popping and all this. And I think that's why I love turfing. So basically when I really got into tartan, it was because of the turfing also. And then the whole connector scene from New York, and then all the flexing and storyboard Pete, that kind of like carried the tradition from Floating John. Like it's not weird that he moves like that, coming from that whole scene.
Definitely.
In New York also.
So
I mean, there's a lot of alternative styles within.
But they branch out, right?
Yeah.
They go from the same branch.
So we have something very conservative.
Yeah.
And something. That was never conservative.
Yeah, and very progressive in a sense.
And how to make space for everything. I think this event is totally like a step forward for this, right? Like that also you get kids that can see actually, oh, I like this or I like this better.
Yeah, you can see
better,
the distinctions
right?
better. Yeah, to add up one more thing to, I really resonate with the way what you say, how you break things down for yourself. So it doesn't matter what kind of terminology you hear, you know, and you want to get it. But I would do the same. I'm also a very scientific mind, state of mind. So I did a science, like a technical university, so very scientific base. So I'm always looking like okay, I hear popping, I hear vibration, I hear the. But what is like the universal, you know, like understanding of it, like something like. Yeah, I always try to get right the technical side of it, but I don't underappreciate the narrative. So I also want to learn about that. So I do learn about both. And to come back to your point, like I get that a lot. Like some people, they say this is it and this is not it. You know, all that saying this is it and claiming it. There's a lot of power play that comes into that. You know, like a lot of people that wanna. You know, there's money involved. People get a reputation. And you know, like all of that is also influencing the language also. So it's really weird. And for me, the way how I want to look at things, for instance, I want to find a certain truth, you know, the different truth I want to find. I want to collect as many as possible perspectives toward that one truth. So basically, if you someone throws a term that I didn't hear, like, I don't know, smurfing, this is one perspective to this thing. And then I want to understand what is that. But then I don't limit to that. For me, this could be another way to look at the same thing. So what I'm trying to do, I try to collect as many and many possible perspectives to the same thing that I want to discover, and trying to eliminate as much as possible blind spots that I may have. You know. So for me, there's not one truth that can. There's only, you know, able to only exist in a vacuum. So there can be multiple truths. Existing together, and the one can't, it's not excluding other, you know, like, so this is for me how I want to look at it, what from a more open mind of state, and and but I understand these power culture, you know, these power struggles, all that stuff that's happening in our culture, but I think it's part of it, you know. So I don't try to condemn it, you know. I don't try to be, I think it's good to be critical, to be think critical about it, but don't say, oh, it's only bad, you know. I try to take the good with the bad and other way around, and so try hard to see, okay, this is it, this is what we are dealing with, what can we do better? So I'm a very action person, action-oriented person, how can we solve this? So instead of thinking, but it's good to start first identifying, okay, what is going on, why is
this
going on?
And what do you want to solve?
What do I want to solve? Ultimately, a healthier community.
And how is it unhealthy? If he's already signaled, what is the...
Yes, good point. Like, there are a lot of ways that are people that are not being seen, people that are maybe, you know, some recognition that are not being given, or, you know, like competition-wise, people that are, don't understand why they won or lost, you know, don't want to join battles anymore, or don't know how to progress, you know, because they are confused by the terminology that's thrown at them. So many things that could be improved. It's not necessarily that we are sick, you know, as a community. I just think we can always look for, you know, how to make things better for the future generation. And then consciousness, you know, just bring more consciousness about that collective consciousness that we are all trying to find a common ground, that we understand each other and not just like, okay, my way don't resonate with yoga. That's right. Because for me, like ultimate goal, purpose, I would say healthy community, but actually on top of it is harmony. Mm-hmm. I really want to pursue, I want to try to find and create, make harmony possible. But to get to harmony, what do you need? Conflict. You need to resolve conflict. You cannot go bypass conflict and think that you can get to harmony. No, you got to first make sure, okay, where are we colliding, why? But sometimes this conflict, someone is not really going into the conflict. They are dodging the conflict, mm-hmm. or they are neglecting the conflict, and that's not being solved, right? So all of that, I think, yeah, stuff like that, if we can, like stuff like that, we talk about it more, be open-minded, be understanding towards each other, and it's to find understanding. So it's like the snowball effect. First you get transparency, that's what we're doing, being transparent. As a result of being transparent, you can get to understand each other. Once you get to understand each other, you can respect each other more, and once you respect, you get harmony. So this is kind of a cycle, is how I look at it. So I hope this,
yes. That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for the shout out on the event. I appreciate it. Like with Book of Styles, it kind of emerged similar to your story, because I saw a lot of people not wanting to be involved anymore, and I wanted to find a way to create something where I didn't have to feel like that, and I could try to create a space for other people to be like, I could go to that event, mm-hmm. And then lately, me and Jing, we've been talking, it's like the divides with like the animators, right, and then the tutters and this and that. I mean, it's actually awesome, right? Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, are we just going to be in different events all the time and not communicate anymore? So the idea with this event was like finding a way to balance that out. You got categories for the people that are really into the categories, and then you've got some fusion for people that like to mix and mm-hmm. fuse and find their confidence through creativity, so to speak. And then you got some just raw get down and ciphers mm-hmm. and solos. Mm-hmm. So, we tried to find something that would hopefully be a space where we could be different, but we could still respect our differences and be in the same room together. So I wanted to also throw out the question for you guys as people that are like leaders and organizers, is what are elements that you like to provide for your events or for your students? What are the things that you feel we really need maybe at our events that can be helpful for like the next generation of dancers moving forward? Because, sometimes it's just a competition and then it's like, there's a lot missing, right?
Can I start to be short? Because I think, you guys, I've diverged so far that I have my own event that's called Open Your Mind. Which is just basically for the freaks and the misfits of the communities. Not just this one, but all of them.
Yeah.
So it was a week ago, and people from Hong Kong to Japan to even USA, which doesn't ever happen that US people buy the tickets to get to Europe. You're one of the... Usually we have to bring them.
For sure.
Come to this competition to blow up the basically blow up the mind, right? Yeah. And the idea was... Like the inspiration, the older any community gets, because I'm part of all of them, so I'm also a house dancer, active hip-hopper used to be, breaker, it's all the same. The fresh ones, the new ones are a beautiful place for minds that are creative, and the longer you stay there, they become a little bit more conservative, mm-hmm. right? Because we got the basics, and it's all good. The people, the older we get, try to conserve this culture. That's beautiful because it has longevity. But it becomes harder and harder for people, and you can see it on Summer Dance Forever, you can see it at Juice Taboo, you can see it every big competition. With usually back in the days, breaking was big exception to the rule, but now closes down. Then hip-hop freestyle was quite an exception to the rule, and how far it was accepted, how freakish, let's say, how off basics an artist could get. But slowly all those communities are now quite well based, and I've been to India, to let's say to Madrid, and they get the same basics, even though they have their own culture flips to it, right? So we did that, the internet did that, we fixed that problem, new school, mid school, old school dictionaries, they're all the same. So the ability was, I need something really different. So how do you make a format where I push you in and you have to be creative? Mm-hmm. That's basically what Open Your Mind did. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to you whether you pop lock, but do tap mm-hmm. dance or circus,
yeah.
whether you are a creative screamer or you can even make flowers. Mm-hmm. If you dare, you could enter that event. But it's really off. So we have a very diverse winners. We have 50-50 women and men that win those events. Mm-hmm. I did it in 5 or 6 countries. I did it with really diverse origins of styles, because I love to see how the origin and what is the meta game. I don't know if you know the terminology. So what's the current meta? What's the state? What's the most popular thing to do, right?
Right.
When it starts, and then suddenly there were the threads, and everybody's going threading. And there you see that we kind of, so far, we managed to keep that strange diversity that sometimes people win with a classical background. Sometimes there was a meta that leaned towards b-boys because they have acrobatics and then mixed styles. And there was a certain amount of winners that do animation.
Mm-hmm.
Because also animation could have a... That's it. And you have to see, I cannot explain it. That it was really,
really dope event.
Yeah.
I already told the future a lot about it. I don't know if you already saw it. But you guys don't share videos, so nobody can see. He's making it exclusive.
Wow.
Yeah.
I share some reactions,
right?
From people after event saying I was depressed and it changed my life, or I wanted to quit dancing and it changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically to keep. What we do is I transform battle into theater live. So it means every round you win, at one point you just insert it in the whole theater piece with actors and whatnot, and it forces you to become creative.
Yeah.
And it goes from just one round, after 1 minute, the final is 10 minutes.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it just puts you somewhere. I put the last final was 5 doors on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
And you go for it.
Yeah.
Right, live musician, stuff like that. So it becomes a trend. We were one of the first, and now it's quite trendy. Every country has kind of a version of it, which I'm really glad. And I'm afraid that in 10 years it's become meta.
Mm.
And so I'm already thinking, how I fuck up the system in 10 years? Because then people understand how to win it.
Yeah.
They adopt to that. Because it happened to all, that's what I call the meta game. So if you see the winners of the big events, whatever the big names, the other ones that are looking are learning how to do,
how to win.
And then you
check the boxes.
So those styles, and I love to see all of them, from break to hip hop to crumping. It's like they go as waves of the winners are the biggest examples of how the dance is. And it's a little bit too bad because I like actually to find the stones where the freaks are. Like nobody understands or everybody thinks you're wrong.
Yeah.
And then start pouring water of life to those freaks cultivate the wrong. Because teachers say you do that wrong and they hit it off. And they say, no, that's wrong, I love it. Keep doing it wrong. Because I think every pioneer did it wrong.
Yeah, like you said.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right? Well done. End of message. So keep doing the wrong. Oh, that's a mistake. Good, in 10 years it's going to be you.
I did a workshop before Flat Top, and I of course stayed for his workshop. When he started his workshop, he said, I want you to take your worst flaws and then show it to me. He wanted to take whatever was really bad, and then they could repeat this thing over and over again, and trying to get and he did all his it was just fun. But I think really with the dancing, I don't think we have seen anything yet. I'm not even sure. For some people it's maybe very important where it's from. For other people it shouldn't be important. And I think the most important thing is we shouldn't judge each other.
Mm.
For you can think it's very important what name it has.
Yeah.
I can think it's not that important for what name it has.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm more concerned about how does it look in 40 years. When I have to come up with something new, then I can also think, what would Taco have done if he would have done this? Or what would this person do, would that person do? Or I would actually try and tap into the future and think, okay, so also when me and Future were just doing these steps, it's also part of a conversation on how to change the dance into more futuristic type of dancing. Of course, it's going to be more technical in the future. Will it also be more free? It's going to be more free because you have more technique to be free with. It's like the puppet master. the Uber puppet master is the guy with the best technique, not because he's most technical, because he can get the more spirit into the human. So that must be the same thing. The more technique you have, and that could be breaking, popping, everything together, then you can be a free spirit and really project the human spirit in that many different versions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, for me, that's what I hope to see. That also, like, I think it's important messaging is also that we all have different stories to tell.
Mm.
And just because they're different doesn't make each of them wrong.
No.
Or which one is true is maybe not that important at a certain point. And like I said, in Europe we had mechanical dancing in the year 1400, but in China it was 2000 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And if we start to look at all the waving, where does it come from?
Southeast
Asia. Is it like Bali? Is it where from where? Where?
Yeah.
Like, so all our culture came from the, like, the big cities where all these different cultures, they met, and that happened. And that's what we're looking at, right? So the tarting, the waving, all, like I said, I have this geometrical system. I have a geometrical system. It's a circle and a square and the triangles. It's not something that I made up. It's a geometrical system. So when you have like all these type of styles that you can put together, it's kind of like, yeah, I hope in the future people would not be limited by how it was, but most by what can they do with it.
Yeah. Open-mindedness in this projection.
When I think about kind of like our camp and fam, you know, from like Damon and you and Thomas and Junius and me and the people I work with, like, I noticed that it's different, right? Like, we don't look, you don't look like Damon. You and Thomas don't look the same.
Yeah.
Junius don't look like Thomas.
Yeah.
I don't look like Junius.
Yeah.
You know, like, but how did Damon, how did that mentality happen successfully? Because that's what I feel like that's so important. Like, you can pass something on, but not force someone to be you 100%. So you found your own thing 110%.
Yeah,
like, you're such an individual. So how, what was that little journey?
But Damon is so smart, right? So yeah, I would ask him, like in 86, I asked him, so can you teach me like the best way if I can do a wave? Like the best way. Like, and then he says, well, what kind of wave are you thinking about? Is it like an electrical wave, like a water wave, or what kind of wave are you thinking about? And that's the thing, right? Is all those questions that you're gonna have to think about what you wanna do yourself. And I danced with Damon since 85. In 98, when I did a show in London and we were all there, after the showcase, then he came over to me and said, congratulations, I can see now you have really found your own style. And that's like a day I would never forget. And I danced for 16 years back then, right? 16 years. And then I got lucky. Because I didn't have my own style. What I had was just like all these different things I had learned from all these different people. That, like, I was greedy and I had favorite things from a lot of different people. And I didn't think of that I had to keep in this style or stay inside this box. I learned this, and that. And and then I go back and I would battle the same people that just taught me that stuff last week.
Star Wars.
And it was really like a positive movement, and we all still know each other, and like sick. It's like my good friends and family.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you.
Well, okay, cool. So, everybody doing good still?
Yeah.
y'all with us? Cool. So, yeah, we got 15 minutes left, so we're going to open it up for Q&A and let y'all ask some questions. So,
can I start it off?
Yes, please.
I've been listening to you guys, and you're all from the old guard, if I may say it like that. you're from the older generations, and I am sitting here 24 years old from a very new generation in my perspective. And I feel like listening to you guys now, I hear a big difference in proactivity in the community from my generation to your generation. I hear you guys talking about websites, waiting for hours to download videos to, you know, learn your styles. And I'm just going to weekly classes as a 12 or 13 year old kid, learning from, you know, a guy who's really good, in my opinion. So I was just wondering, like, do you guys ever think about that? And do you guys ever think about how you could maybe make us more proactive? Because I feel like the newer generation is kind of just leaning, like, on you guys, maybe a little bit. Like, in my own perspective, I feel that I'm leaning on a lot of you guys. Too much, maybe. It's making me a little bit lazy when it comes to dancing. So, yeah, that's, I guess, my question. Maybe, how would you... Have you ever thought about stimulating proactivity? Like...
Yes. I think we do all the time by present, right? Like, but also I think all the kids nowadays are so much smarter than we were, yeah. Or at least I can speak for myself, yeah. Being 14, 15, 16, and the stuff, the way I spent my time compared to like how a lot of kids spend their time now, is, I'm very positive about that. Like also what we talked about, there's so much that you can dig into, so much you can be a fan of. And we talk about also the difficulties with the community, and if you look at skateboarding, then kind of like every company have a skateboarding team, and that's not with popping. So maybe, I think just like what you're seeing, you're gonna totally find your own way with this, right? But I think all the young people are doing a lot, actually. And I've been teaching generation after generation after generation, and there's no question about it. The generation are getting better and better, and the standards are higher, and they want to do even more and learn more and more techniques, and they want more. So yeah, I'm confident.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, thank you, Roy. I mean, we practice every week, so I know that. and we need to get you to the practice with feet and elbows. like this. You know, to go. But to reflect a little bit, I believe in the philosophy that I call myself Style Wars. I think the best terminology that can describe all of our cultures when you put next to the popping, breaking, whatever. It's the war of styles. I have a tendency, maybe I'm too naive about it, that most people that chose to dance one of those styles for life are kind of warriors. They would either would fight or have problems in their life, and then replace this war with something creative. And I really love to create those wars. It means that any, because we cannot unwind the process. We cannot return it back to 90s. And make, and there was just a numbers game, right? Just the mathematics. There were so few of people. So every fifth was an innovator. Now there are millions. So mathematically, right, it's much harder to innovate, but they still are there. Mm-hmm. It's harder to become a champion, but still they are there because the basics never change. There's still a style war going on. I hope everybody here wants to be better than us. And then I hope somebody after you wants to be better than you. And then the other, but you don't do it just by ego. You do it by proving that your own style is so unique, dope, whatever you want to put to it. So traditionally, you can be the specialist, you can be the generalist, you can be experimentalist, whatnot. I think those never change. And maybe for you specifically, Roy, that would be a little bit harder because you need motivation. But yeah. There's someone in India who doesn't.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, you come back and beat your ass. After my question, I was thinking
that's
that.
He's like... in battle. It's just, and then, you know, but somebody from Korea will beat his ass or hers. Mm. And that's that never changed. That's still coming, even though, like you know, I create new platforms. Puma create a platform. In the beginning, those platforms are very open because it's like creative. But in 5 years, it's going to be hundreds of people, and it's going to be really hard to win again. But it doesn't change the real fact that whether Sting did it on the street in Paris, finding some street guy to battle. You fought? Have you ever fought in those battles? No? I did. Even in Eindhoven, that was sometimes going into fights.
In the '80s.
Yeah. It's the redness and the style. Luckily, the dance replaced something else, which became a creative war, and that separates also the whole hip hop from, let's say, more academical, all the academical styles. That we embrace it, that we do it ourselves. The skill is the language. Or you don't need, you know, you don't need a lesson. Basically, no one needs a lesson. You could just go and grind your way up, and that's what I wanted to say. As long as there's war, you can match those styles. I think we have to be very careful when the battles disappear.
Mm, yeah.
It's gonna be when a competition in any form, whether it's theatrical competition or street competition, cypher competition, even the cyphers, we don't really get that to exchange, right? Oh, that's so nice, love. Oh, we'll exchange with love, but I also want to be better than somebody just before. Or we get intimidated when somebody's too good. And then your monkey's brain starts like, you go back, you practice. I think it never changed, right? It was 30 years ago like that, it's still like that. Mm-hmm. And whether you use teachers, YouTube, Patreon, or you just, in your own mind, the war, that's what you need to win. Mm.
Yeah, I would just also add, like, self check-ins, you know, ask yourself, why do you love to do this, and lean into what you love about it sometimes too, you know, like, and are you challenging yourself enough to come out of your comfort zones? Are you learning to love that? Because actually that's where all the growth is. All the growth is on the other side of what you don't feel like doing that day, you know?
Yeah.
So, but if you're leaning into what you love about it, oh, this music makes me want to dance today. Oh, these creative ideas, I'm excited about them. Let me do more of that. So I always lean into what I'm excited about. That's how I stay driven. And then I use events and situations like being here and just everything I do as challenges to push myself to the next place that I didn't know I could be at. So lean into what you love, and then what are those next small goals? Set some small goals for yourself, you know? Because then you're just enjoying taking the risks and pushing yourself, hopefully.
Yeah.
So that helps me.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
You got this, bro. He's got
it. I feel like it's more of a therapy session now.
Yeah, one more question before, and then we'll go to the other room.
All right, last question, y'all. Who wants it?
Oh, yeah, you can go ahead.
It was interesting when you were speaking about, yes, I like all the, you know, different styles, you know, how do you, I was not here before, so I don't know what was the question, the topic before, but I guess it was your own style, you know, can you create your own style, or are you, like, do you still like, are you going to be like a student for life, you know?
Mm.
And how do you, it was interesting, your link to, I want to be like you, and I really like that, and I want it, you know, and I want to play with it, you know, show him like a variation of his step, you know, and something like that. But the question is,
No, it's fine. I get it totally, because if you summon up what we were talking about, also when you were not here,
and also when you dance, because you think of these styles, you know. And like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah, for me, it's mostly about like if you talk about the gravity, anti-gravity, resistance, instead of maybe talking about how to. Like, what type of resistance am I talking about? Am I moving under the water now with that, you know? Mm-hmm. Or am I in, like, porridge? You know, like, so what I'm trying to say is that geometrical dancing provides for all these lines and fixed points and ways, and you can go any way, you can twist and turn. We have the body we have, and then with the animation styles and the waving, and that's what we talked about, like how all these things comes together in the future. So I believe mostly there's a system that provides for everybody. And since we're all always different from the next person, then we would never do the same, but there's a... And then we talk about the more technique you learn from all these different types of systems, the more free as a human being you can be to express what you want to express. So whatever I teach is not my stuff. All my stuff is something that I learned from somewhere else. And when I say I created something, then maybe it's just like a new path or something that made me think this way that I could develop, and maybe something I did 20 years ago, now I can revisit it again. So
the question is, how can you be just one, you know, in all these styles? Can you be, you know, when you say your own style, get, you know, you do you learn like all those systems, but when you freestyle, if you mix all those styles, we can say that you have your own styles, because everybody can mix, you know.
You have to have your own style to be you. Mm. Even if we do the same style, it would still be different. So I think it's overrated, this thing about you have to have your own style. Okay. Like, tell this to a person who played a violin, but you have to have your own style. Maybe you can find some melody that you like to play or something like this, but I think everything we do is based upon...
Because, when you say... because when you do a certain style, they always say, yeah, you get to do in this particular way. In this style, I love this particular thing.
Yes, please.
I take that from you, you know?
Yes, please.
Yeah. No problem. But can I also, like... But I think it's like, this is what I like in hip-hop. It's like, it's not really easy. When you say you have to be respected, you know, even if people don't like you, you have to do your thing. It's a challenge. It's like a life challenge, you know. So I like that.
If I can help a little bit, maybe that give it back to you, because we have to go in a sec. I help. Part of my job is to help young choreographers to go from hip hop to modern theater, that's an interesting thing, because it helps a lot. Theatrical, because when I listen to Steen, I don't know, but I assume you did theater work.
I did so much for 30 years, like.
Because it's in his language.
Yeah, I black so much, but I tell you later.
Yeah, with beer. But right, and the interesting thing is the theater looks at our culture, because they say, damn it, you have 1 million choreographers and 10 million directors. How the fuck do you do that? Because we are one of the few cultures that are next to the style wars, are constantly self-searching, right? So the reason why you pick a certain style, I say, I want to do it, has something to do with who are you, right? And what resonates and what inspires or hurts you. And actually, the process when your style starts to emerge, it's part of a very painful self-searching. And I know I am good with words, so I can put it in words. But for most people, it happens in silence. It's that silent language that said what not to do. And it's a beautiful but very unteachable. Nobody teaches you what not to do, right? They say, I'm going to explain you the strut, the tut, the Fresno, the film, right? But they don't say what not to do. You only can decide, right? What not to do, what resonates with your thing. And that's a tough one, because that's unteachable. You can teach people to make a theater piece of 1 hour. You can teach people, you know, to do all those techniques, but nobody has ever said what not to do. And it's actually what's not to do what makes such a unique artist. All of them from Isadora Duncan, which has nothing to do with popping, right, to Mr. Wiggles, they all share the same trait, in my opinion. They're very good at knowing what they're not to do. And they chose that way and they stuck to that way, and they maybe master a thousand things, but like a sword you want to formulate your point, it's the sharpest one. And you need a lot of techniques, that's right. But just before we were talking about the diversity is so big. Jing, you revert to so many terminologies, so many what not to do is a psychological process. It's a process of kind of understanding how to become your own choreographer. And by that, the choreographers that are really good are going through hell sometimes to figure out who they are. And when you figure out who you are, oh my God, that's going to be so beautiful. Right? That you see them, you already always see them. Look at any style, whether it's Menno or Breaking or whether it's your neighbor, who I admire a lot. We never met, but you know, I always see you chosen, and there's something within your heart and the soul that made that choice, right? And you stick to this choice, and then it resonates beyond borders and cultures, beyond judges, and you know, beyond material things.
Then I have one quick question, if I may ask it quickly. Because we're talking very much about the inner self and what we love and what we do, but it's also like, if you want to have a successful career in popping, for example, you got to appeal to an audience. And there always seems to be some people that are just maybe a little bit naturally clumsier than the other one, and so the other one is more appealing. So how do you work with that as a community? How do we open up more towards stuff like clumsiness? You know, like we seem to really not dislike clumsiness in a way.
A little bit. So that's for the future, and then
we for the future. Yeah. Let's go.
You don't have to do anything for anybody. You choose. That's why I said lean into what you love, because maybe you just like doing creative videos. I mean, success is defined differently by everybody. That you could be really funky in your clumsiness if you just own it and don't let someone else define what clumsy is. If clumsy in your mind becomes funky, or like, that's my shit, you know, like, then you just rock that, you know? So, like, you define what success is. You define what feels good for you, you know? That's not to say you don't have to learn to be adaptable in certain settings, right? For, like, a contest or something. I just did that for myself, like, in China. I geared what I did in a different way to kind of do more of a performance mode thing, where before I was just like, yeah, I feel like I'm just going to feel it out. But still, either way, it's my choice to feel good about, you know? And we can change, too, right? You can be, like, really into not being the best at the battles, and then you can have a period where you're really excited about that. And when you're excited about it, that's you being yourself, because there's a genuine good feeling to, like, let me try to, like, adapt and get better at these things. But you know, like, at the end of the day, all of that is just for small self growth moments. So it's like, yeah, like, again, just make small goals for yourself. It's all for you. Your art is for you, your dance is for you, the situations are to challenge, like, how adaptable you are and how good you can feel through those small goals you've made for yourself in those things. But there's never an end to success, right? Let's say you start winning all these battles, but then you're going to want to do what's your next step, you know? So at the end of the day, you still got to right now feel good about whatever, if it is that you're saying that about yourself, like it feel like a clumsy vibe or something.
I was speaking more in general. I just see a big difference. Like, I see many people who are trying to have a career, and I'm not even talking about myself, because I'm not trying to have a career in popping at all, but I just see many people who try to, and I see that naturally they're less appealing as a person, as the way they might move their body, or in a natural habitat, you know what I mean? So
maybe they just haven't found the people that appreciate who they truly are, and what they truly do. Yeah.
But I see, like, a general sort of popping mass community or like audience, and like people like Hoan are really he makes a living, like a pretty serious living off of it, off that mass community. And then there are other people who are trying to be in that, but they'll never appeal to it somehow, and so they make less money. Like, this is kind of like maybe my point. Like, how is there an option or a way to open up people to from that mass community to?
Be careful, because it's entrepreneurship is a whole net. It's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
I think you're trying to get artistry into and entrepreneurship at one thing. It's, I mean, you have to be a businessman to earn a living.
Yeah.
And then it's one of the best businessmen I know, and nothing to do with being good at popping. They're just very good entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say the same thing also. You don't have to make a living of your dancing, because actually I stopped doing shows when I was 30 and just did theater productions and this, but I never stopped dancing.
That's right.
But I actually stopped doing shows because it was nobody could really pay for it. You know? And if they didn't understand it, I didn't want to give it to them just for the money. So I wanted to do something different, and I found a lot of the people that I respected the most with their dancing necessarily didn't live off their dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right,
y'all, give it up for your panelists. We're out of here. Playing Pop and Work of Styles 2023. We're battling tomorrow. We got our tutting judge up here. I'm going to be judging Cozen Systems.
Yeah,
just gonna be in the building.
Yeah, maybe.
Now we gotta run.
All right.